Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Neskai of the Dene Nation. In this program, we celebrate the harvest. In Elder Wisdom, we'll meet several members of the Monacan Nation and learn how they gather from the abundance of wild foods in Virginia's Blue Mountains. Judy Bluehorse Skelton takes us on a summer gathering. Nico Nguyen treats us to songs and dances celebrating food. Judy Trejo shares a handful of pine nut songs. And Jack Dalton tells a traditional Yupik story from Alaska called The Gathering Song.
The men kneeled on the ground, and the woman stood behind them.
Katoom, katoom,
the drum said, and all the people knew already which song was coming, The Gathering Song.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. Stay with us.
You're listening to Wade Fernandez doing his composition, A Guitar Chants for the People, from his album, Wachiwa Napis Mawawa. You can learn more about Wade and his music at wadefernandez.com.
Thank you.
This is Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Nesky. For some indigenous peoples of North America, the harvest of wild foods is still central to the way of life as it was for their ancestors of past centuries. The Monacans gather and enjoy wild foods along with the fruits and other crops from the orchards and farms in Virginia's Blue Mountains. In this chapter of Elder Wisdom, Barbara Roberts introduces us to several members of the Monacan Nation. Speaking to us from the open-beamed, high-ceiling room that serves as their community center, the gentle cadences of Monacan life are revealed.
Growing up in apple orchards in Virginia's Blue Ridge Mountains is typical of a Monacan life. The springtime petals fall and cover the ground like a white blanket with a pinkish hue. The buds give way to luscious, juicy fruit that come ready for harvest just before the leaves begin to turn to their vibrant colors of yellow, red, and gold. The setting inspires some to poetry.
In late September, evenings bring Monacan women to the tribal center kitchen where they make apple butter. They gather their aprons, headscarves tied on, descending the hillsides with dusk.
Karen Wood is Monacan. She's also a researcher, specializing in Native American culture for the Smithsonian. Wood remembers the apple harvest in this poem she wrote.
The first night, they pare, core, and quarter cooking apples, imperfect yellow spheres stacked in bushel baskets, no crimson waxed delicious, no green Granny Smiths, no empires. All evening women chop as apple chunks turn the color of earth in the air, as leaves begin to yellow in the darkness. They need one quart of apples for every half pint, baskets empty as fingers grow moist, then wrinkle, among laughter and the scrapes of small knives that pare and pare again.
This is life on Bear Mountain, the focal point of Monacan culture, where many ancestors are laid to rest. Where the Monacan are working to preserve their culture, just as they've worked to preserve the harvest through the making of apple butter. As a way of sharing their traditions, the Monacan are in the process of creating a replica of a Monacan village that's been open to the public for a few years now. The village is near a natural bridge. And just as the village is a way to preserve Monacan culture, the natural bridge once played a role in preserving Monacan survival. Legend has it that the Monacan were in a desperate battle with enemy tribes. As the enemy fiercely descended on the Monacan warriors, they found themselves backed against a great canyon, nowhere to go. The women and children huddled together and prayed. Warriors fought back, trying to hold the enemy at bay. Then, mysteriously, out of the mist, a great stone bridge appeared. The women and children escaped to safety, and the battle was won. The natural bridge in Virginia is known as one of the seven wonders of the modern world. For the Monacan, it's a sacred site. They chose to make their home some 35 miles east of that bridge on Bear Mountain. Karen Wood.
Bear Mountain is what we call our spiritual center. It's a fairly small mountain. It's one of the foothills before you get to the bigger mountains, which are still very small compared to the Rockies. But I like to remind people that these are the oldest mountains in the world, and so they're kind of worn down and bent over, you know, kind of like an elder in a way.
The elders are treasured by the Monacan because they're seen as a tangible link to a living heritage. Hattie Hamilton is a tribal elder. She remembers bountiful gardens of the three sister crops, corn, beans, and squash. Hamilton says they never went hungry, and they never let anybody else go hungry either.
Dad was a farmer. We always had our own cows and for milk, you know, and butter, and our chickens for the eggs and all. Had our own gardens and everything. Killed our own hogs, cured our hams and everything. And we fed so many people. My mother fed more people, I guess, than any other person in Amherst. I don't know if it ever was a meal that our house was eating with just our family. It was always somebody dropping by, you know, happened to drop by at mealtime, and we'd always have plenty, you know, for everybody.
The tie to the land is a vital part of the Monacan psyche. Drawing food from the soil is as natural to the Monacan as a walk down the produce aisle of a grocery store. Hamilton also says wild meat in the woods sustained her people, and still does.
Oh, yes, we always went hunting. We still hunting mushrooms, but you can't seem to find many of them now. My daddy liked to hunt. My daddy used to go out and kill squirrels and things for us. I've got a son now that's hunting crazy. He lives to hunt. It's turkey season's in right now, and her brother and him's going hunting every morning, I reckon. But my daddy never did hunt much other than, you know, squirrels. He never did, and rabbits. Now and then he would kill a rabbit, but mostly squirrels, because my mother loves squirrel and squirrel gravy. She loved the squirrel.
Chief Branham's mother, Lacey, talks with relish about the varieties of traditional game.
When we was kids, we used to have to make box traps to catch rabbits in, and Mama would cook ham. And we would eat deer meat and, you know, rabbit meat, groundhog, turtles. You got to cut them at the shell, you know. That's the way you get the meat out, you know. But it's good meat. It's good meat. And each piece of it tastes different. Yeah, we've eaten many one of those. Poke salad. We have poke salad. Have you hear talk of poke salad? Yeah, well, that's something good right now. Wild lettuce, that was good. And creasy salad. Have you heard talk of creasy salad? Yeah. Yeah, we used to go out and cut that. We do that now. How did I do? Yeah. And that was good for rheumatism. Yeah, drink that wine for rheumatism. And a lot of people say poke salad will kill you, but it won't kill you. I do. We'd be dead a long time ago.
The woods and all other forms of nature are completely interwoven with the everyday life of the Monacan. A closeness to nature is such an integral part of Monacan culture that a dialogue actually develops. Karen Wood says it's a form of nonverbal communication, a real exchange.
But what I'm also talking about is a very deep sense of an everyday kind of religious experience, maybe not religious, maybe just spiritual is the best way to describe it, where you understand your place in the world, your specific place in a land that interacts with you, you know, so that what I say is you touch a tree and the tree touches you back. It's not like you're just touching a tree. You know, the tree has presence, it has vitality, and some of our people say they can speak to other living things. There's a communication there, it's not like you're sitting around talking to animals like Dr. Doolittle, you know, but there is a communication process. And I've been able to observe this because in my own life, when things were not going well, I would try to practice sitting still. And I felt like if you sit still and you observe what's around you, you feel that sense of connection. You don't feel alienated or lonely or lost if you know your place in everything.
An openness to look inside, to sit in stillness with others, and to work together. From the enormous task of building a village to the sweet, everyday ones, such as gathering apples for the harvest.
Now, through the music of spoons, jars, and pots, through laughter, what remains is reduced to the essence of apple, roots and limbs laden with gold circles. We are blessed by the hands of these women who ladle into jars an enchantment made by heart, who condense, seal, process, and sell apple butter at St. Paul's Church Bazaar, $3 for a pint.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Barbara Roberts.
Today's Elder Wisdom segment featured the Monacan Nation. It was upon Monacan ancestral land where Thomas Jefferson established his home, Monticello, just outside Charlottesville, Virginia. Monticello was the site of the 2003 Lewis and Clark Bicentennial Kickoff. As the National Park Service unfolds this commemoration, listen for a special series of Wisdom of the Elders featuring stories focusing upon the culture and history of Native nations along the expedition route. I'm Arlie Nesky. You're listening to Wisdom of the Elders.
In addition to hosting our program, Arlie Nesky is a well-known singer, composer, and performer. After all, his Diné name means Red Singer. Arlie's song, We Were Fishing at Celilo, was written for the musical Celilo, a work in progress by Portland composer and producer Marv Ross. The song celebrates the joy of fishing for salmon by the native people of the Columbia, a central part of their tradition.
When you feel the fish hit the net, blow that whistle. Remember, the falls are the drum. The winds are your singers. The fish are your dancers. Just sing the round bustle.
In addition to his musical talents, Arlie Nesky is a noted storyteller and an authority on Native culture and spirituality. He presently serves as a Seattle Arts Commissioner in Washington State.
Coming up, Nico Wind and Tribal Rhythms puts on a feast of harvest song and dance. Judy Trejo treats us to a bag full of pine nut songs. And we meet Turtle Island storyteller Jack Dalton. Next up, Judy Bluehorse Skelton takes us on a summer gathering. Stay with us. This is Wisdom of the Elders. This is Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Nesky. Before the harvest comes the summer and the time of reaching out. The corn stretches toward the sun. The plant people are at their fullest. Educator and herbalist Judy Bluehear Skelton, in her Health and Healing segment, reminds us that it is a time for human beings to reach out to the world and to each other.
The long days of summer, where we're active, we're fully engaged, we're at the height of manifesting our vision. Summer is the time of youth. Summer can be the time of passions. We're living at our fullest. We're extended. We're out. We're embracing community. It's a time to interact with all of our relations and to be very active in service and participate in the long, yellow days of summer. If you look at a society like the American society, the mainstream society, you can guess which direction or which season, as a culture, mainstream society likes to stay in. It's summer, youth. It's let's stay active. Let's stay youthful. Let's stay young. Those are all good things. However, we miss the gift of maturity. We miss the gift of contemplation, reflection. We miss the gifts of moving into the role of being of service. We miss the gifts of letting go, of releasing, letting things move on. And so we kind of get stuck as a society. You can see it in the youth culture as a country. There's a certain immaturity. We stay caught up in emotional passions. We don't mature into the wise elder. And to mature and grow and become the wise elder means we have to move through the West to come to the North and dream again and begin all over again with fresh vision, fresh inspiration, new knowledge, and things to share when spring comes again. So the plants follow this cycle. In gathering plants, you can follow the medicine of the plants with the seasons. If you're going to gather St. John's wort, which is a beautiful little yellow flower, sometimes called Klamath weed around here, it blooms in June, and you're gathering the fresh flowers before they're pollinated, which means you've got to beat the bees to it. You've got to have the time. You've got to set the priority to be out in the garden or to be out in the wild to gather your St. John's wort buds. And so the energy for that plant has moved to the flowers, as all plants do, in summertime, spring and summer. Early spring, the energy is in the shoots, the greens. So if you're gathering, that's where the medicine will be. That's where the energy's moving. Flowers in the summer and in the fall. Some seeds, the fruits, as they come into full bearing, is the time to gather them. When the energy starts to move back into the root, if you're gathering energy or medicine, if you're gathering plants for root medicine, you might be digging roots in late fall, or some do that in early spring, depending on the plant, depending on the person, depending on the land where you are. The plants will let you know. Herbal medicine is becoming very popular. There's been a huge increase in the demand for doctors to be able to use plant medicine or herbal medicine in conjunction with their conventional medicine, which might be drugs. I'm going to use hypertension as an example, high blood pressure. Often someone will be given high blood pressure medication and then a diuretic. And the diuretic, which causes one to keep from retaining water, tends to deplete the body of minerals and vitamins. And so often someone who's given a diuretic will be given potassium to take, other minerals, vitamins, but mainly minerals, to supply what the diuretic is just washing out of the body. And there are some wonderful natural diuretics, like dandelion leaves, that are high in minerals. They're high in potassium and other minerals. There are some wonderful herbs for hypertension itself, like hawthorn berries. However, they have found that more medicine is in the flower and leaf, and so usually hawthorn flower, leaf, and berry make a nice combination as a tea. You can have hawthorn berry jam. I love to make hawthorn berry jam with rose hips. You can do rose hip and elderberry and huckleberry and hawthorn berry jam. And it's a wonderful elder's tonic, actually, anybody. I do add some honey. Honey and maple syrup seem to work better for a lot of Native people than cane sugar. And that's a nice substitute with your recipes to still have that sweet. I mean, it's still a sugar, honey and maple syrup are, but I have found that people can handle the maple syrup and the honey better. And so, wonderful jams that you can make. If you're going to gather hawthorn for hypertension or a heart tonic in general, the flowering happens in spring and the berries happen later in the summer. So in this case, you would be pinching the flower with a few leaves around it and letting that dry. And then later in the year, in the summer, coming back and gathering the berries and then drying them. And then mixing them together, you've got your complete hawthorn tea. With each breath, with each step, in every moment, may you all be well, eat well, be joyful, and create beauty wherever you go. Osadadu.
Plant medicines are some of our most sacred and powerful teachings, and we are grateful to our herbalists who maintain that knowledge. Judy Bluehorse Skelton teaches at conferences and workshops and at the clinic of the National College of Naturopathic Medicine in Portland, Oregon. And now in today's tribal rhythms, Nico Nguyen spreads a feast of songs and dances celebrating the harvest.
Hokahe, welcome. It is good to have you here at this celebration of music about native foods. The songs and dances that tell the story of how animals are captured and how plants are gathered and harvested. You are hearing a welcoming song of the native tribes of the Northwest. Many tribes would make seasonal trips to the Great Columbia River to fish for salmon or trade and visit. They would be greeted and entertained with get acquainted dances or songs like this one. Our table is groaning with the weight of many musical dishes we have to serve, telling of fish and poultry, buffalo and venison, beans, squash, and of course, corn. We have many native songs that also sing the virtues of food, of maple sugar, pine nuts, rice, and berries. Come and sample just some of the bounty. Come and enjoy. Here is fish. Some native dances simply acknowledge the special traits and beauty of creatures that are enjoyed as food. The Ojibwe fish dance features men and women circling clockwise around the singers at the drum. They bend forward and extend both arms back to the right and then flutter their hands in imitation of fins. The song is repeated each time with a new gesture, like jumping or kneeling. The Laguna Buffalo Dance of the Zuni features both women and men. It is performed in the spring and autumn to bring good luck for hunting by honoring the game. The men wear shaggy horned buffalo headdresses. They carry miniature bows and arrows that they thrust forward or wave in a figure eight motion. Pine nuts are a staple for the Paiute people and an important part of their culture. They would be delicious sprinkled on fish or venison. The pine nuts are harvested in the fall when people give thanks. In this song, the word divan means pine nut. An Iroquois meal wouldn't be complete without at least one of the three sisters, corn, beans, and squash. The sturdy corn stalks support the twining beans, and the shade of the spreading squash vine traps moisture for the growing crop. The well-being of each crop is protected by one of the three sisters who, in the Iroquois way, should always be planted together, eaten together, and celebrated together.
Squash grows on the bottom.
Beans grow all around. Corn grows up high. Won't you come and hear our sound?
Squash grows on the bottom. Beans grow all around. Corn reaches high. Three sisters in a mound.
One is heavy.
One is lean.
And the other one is in the
squash grows on the bottom, beans grow all around, corn reaches high, three sisters in a
In Navajo culture, it is the role of the woman to grind the corn for meals. Men would perform a light-hearted song like this to keep the women in good spirits as they worked. You can hear the rhythmic sound of the corn being ground as the women kneel before the grounding stones. Our cooks are tired. They need a break. The serpent dance, performed by the Warm Springs women, who do the cooking for a feast or celebration, is the answer. The tired women go out to the dance area, take a man, could be a friend or even a visitor, and begin dancing with him, forming a line that snakes around the dance floor, mimicking the movements of a serpent. Normally, the man wouldn't refuse, but if he should, his penalty for refusing could be some item of personal adornment, money or kisses, or even his saddle.
Yalo, hey, yalo, hey, yalo, hey, yalo, hey.
Here are beans. This social song of the Abenaki peoples is one of the many that have always been used for gatherings and celebrations. The central purpose of the music is to bring people together. Something sweet? There's maple sugar. The Anishinaabe people of northern Minnesota rarely used salt. Sugar was the basic seasoning for grains and breads, stew, rice, berries, or vegetables. The sugar was made in late March or April in the moon month of boiling when the maple sap ran. An Anishinaabe song praises the favored seasoning. It says, "Maple sugar only satisfies me in the spring." The joyful Hopi butterfly dance is a traditional social dance. It's a Thanksgiving dance for the harvest in August, chiefly for the corn crop. The butterfly dance takes its name from the ancient Hopi custom of young unmarried women wearing their hair in whorls resembling the wings of butterflies on either side of the head. The men, in velvet shirts with multicolored ribbons hanging down their backs, shake rattles and dance by lifting their knees high in a springing step. Plants and animals have been honored with the music and the dances of native people from all directions. We have feasted on their bounty and sampled the variety of their essence. It is good. Pilamie. Thank you.
Tribal Rhythms is produced by our music director, Nico Wind, and written by Anne Morin. If you'd like to learn more about any of the artists or music featured in our programs, visit us on the web at wisdomoftheelders.org. Coming up, we'll hear from Turtle Island storyteller Jack Dalton with a Yupik tale of gathering. Next, the late Judy Trejo tells of the harvest of the pine nut, the staple food of the Great Basin peoples. Stay with us. This is Wisdom of the Elders.
From generation to generation, our elders have been the irreplaceable keepers of knowledge, tradition, and environment. Wisdom of the Elders is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail National Park Service.
Coming up, we'll hear from Turtle Island storyteller Jack Dalton with a Yupik tale of gathering. Next, the late Judy Trejo tells of the harvest of the pine nut, the staple food of the Great Basin peoples.
How many people are familiar with the pinyon nut, which we refer to as pine nuts? Pine nuts grow in certain parts of Nevada. It has a relative called the juniper. Pine nuts are a staple food of the Great Basin people, and not all Great Basin people had access to pine nuts or pinyon nuts, whichever way you choose to call them. All I know is that they are super delicious and really better than popcorn if you're going to kick back and watch TV. There's nothing better than a handful of salted pine nuts. Pine nuts was very valuable as a trade item. I remember my old folks packing their tanned deer hides, brain tan hides. They packed beaded gloves, moccasins, and Indian balsam root, which is a very powerful medicine. It'll cure man or beast. My people would take their goods and go to Carson City, Nevada on Nevada Day. They celebrate Nevada Day every year. And they would trade with the Washoe people because the Washoe tribe had the most pine nuts. They have allotted land with pine nuts on them. And I remember the old folks coming home with a 100-pound sack of pine nuts, a gunny sack full. And they felt very rich because come Christmas time, Mom would make little bags, little cloth bags, and fill it with pine nuts. And this is what they gave to some families. People in Great Basin area, whether they be Paiute, Shoshone, Washoe, took good care of their food items. They always started with prayer and offered a song. And the pine nut blessings begin in the springtime. The people would go up into the mountains in the springtime, long about April or May. And the chosen person that they call Poinabi, that was our word for leader or chief. And the Poinabi was the person that was appointed because of his or her knowledge as to when it was time to bless the pine nuts. And what they did was break a branch off of a pine nut tree, and they picked a branch that had a male cone and a female cone, and they prayed with it. They prayed for a bountiful harvest come fall. And after their prayers, they laid this branch at the bottom of this running water, and they covered it with a rock. And the first song that they offered was a pine nut blessing song. They sing about a little pine nut seed. Tuba Buinzi, the little pine nut seed. And it sings about the male cone and the female cone. They are laying beneath the water together. And that is the first pine nut blessing song they would sing. And they would dance while they were up in the mountains. So whenever you hear this song that begins with the word Tuba Buinzi, they're singing about the pine nut seed as they lay together beneath the water. And when I was small or young, about 12 or 13, I always thought that was so romantic, laying together beneath the water, even if it was pine cones. When you're doing the Pine Nut Blessing Festival, they dance and two appointed people will walk the inner circle, and as they walk, they will throw pine nuts on the ground, and it symbolizes the reseeding for next year's crop. And the words of this song are in Paiute, and they merely say that somebody is walking, and as they go, they are scattering the pine nut seeds. I learned this song from an old gentleman. He was 93 years old at the time, and he's passed on many years ago. His name was Ed Williams. And I learned many songs from this gentleman.
Devandoya, devandoya, hey, na devandoya, devandoya, hey, na one nandiyo, one nandiyo.
And he always said, if you can take my songs and make them sound good, I'll be real proud of you.
Devandoya, devandoya, hey, na devandoya, devandoya,
So whenever I sing these songs, I think about him. So these four pine nut songs are sung in the order in which they should be sung when you have a festival at pine nut harvest. Good eating.
Judy Trejo is an award-winning recording artist, and her music is available on Canon Records. On today's Turtle Island Storytellers, Yupik storyteller Jack Dalton shares a traditional story from Alaska called the Gathering Song.
Very long ago, the human beings lived on the land as they had always done. Families had their own places to gather food and hunt. It was the tradition that the people who had more would share with those who had less. But some people were greedy and did not feel like waiting. They would gather food on another family's land. Families got into fights over these gathering places. During one particularly harsh time, the fight became gruesome. People started killing each other. The situation became dire. Everyone was so busy trying to guard their gathering places, no one was actually going out to hunt. So, no food was brought in. Without new food, it was possible the whole village would starve. Living a little ways from the village was an old man. He was a mysterious man, a shaman. He did not speak often. Only when it was very, very important did the village see and hear this man. The old man appeared one day, right in the middle of the village, before anyone realized it. "What are you doing?" the old man asked. "These are the hardest times we have seen in many generations. Only the strongest people will make it the rest of the winter, and only by working together like brothers and sisters. But you are acting like sworn enemies. 20 of you are already dead, yet none of you has actually starved. When was the last seal killed? The last caribou? You are almost out of arrows and harpoon tips, but you haven't killed a single animal. You're only killing each other. What are you doing?" Then the shaman went inside the guzgig, the big man's house. After a short time, he ordered, "Come!" and the people quickly went inside. The old man was sitting and already had a great drum in his hands. It was so big, it made him look very, very small by comparison. The people knew this drum and knew it was very powerful and made the greatest sound. "The seal and the caribou are always listening," he said. They are always trying to figure out who is worthy of their life. But since you have been trying to kill each other instead, the animals have gotten bored and gone away. To bring them back, you have to work together, like brother and sister. You must dance. The better hunter has the keenest senses, the most control. Hunting is like dancing. To be the best dancer, you must have the keenest sense and the most control. The animals know who the best dancer is. They know who the best hunter is. They can hear it. The drum made a low ka-thum sound, and the people readied themselves to dance. They put on their dancing gloves and held their dancing fans. The men kneeled on the ground, and the woman stood behind them. Ka-thum, ka-thum, the drum said, and all the people knew already which song was coming, the gathering song. But no one had ever actually heard this song, even the eldest people in the village. It was a very, very old song, and it went like this. How cold is the wind, how deep is the snow, that would drive you away from our home. We are deserving of your gift. We are the proudest of human beings. We will never forget your spirit. So in this time, please don't forget ours. No matter how cold the wind, no matter how deep the snow, we will honor you with the hunt. We will honor you with our souls. No one is sure how long the village danced and sang, maybe for days, but everybody knew this was the best anyone had ever danced. The old man said, "This is the song of who we are. It has been a very long time since this song was sung. Only during the times of greatest need do the people sing this song. In many ways, you should be ashamed of yourselves for letting it get this bad. And you must realize, if singing and dancing this song doesn't work, then we are all going to die." He looked out to see if the people recognized this simple truth. "To survive, we must gather. We gather the eggs, the greens, the roots, the berries. We gather the fish. And we must gather the animals that we use. We also gather our strength. We gather our courage and our knowledge. We gather the spirits. We gather our families and our friends. We gather our people. We gather the wood for our fires and houses. We gather the herbs that keep us healthy. We gather the stories of the present and keep those with the stories of our past. This helps us gather the days of the future into our present. We are the gatherers. This is the way of the human beings. The song our hearts sing from our beginning to our end is the gathering song. But there are times when we forget the song of our hearts. This is when we begin to lose trust in those closest to us. We begin to hurt and kill each other. You must never fight each other again. You must dance instead. Let us hope we never have to dance the gathering song again. Let us hope we are never this bad again." The old man set down the drum. "Now, if this song has worked, the hunters will go out tomorrow and bring home animals for us. If we sang and danced good enough, then we have called the animals back to us, who feel we are worthy of their lives. These are the animals that will help us survive the rest of the winter. Now everyone, prepare." Everyone prepared for a great hunt. The men went out into a terrible storm and were gone for 6 days. But when they came back, they had 5 caribou. The song had worked. No one saw the old man again. They believed that after making such great magic to save an entire village from starvation, he went up into the sky country to live. But every so often, the people believed they could hear him drumming softly in the sky, helping just a little bit, so the gathering song will never be forgotten again.
This Yupik story by Jack Dalton was produced by Surreal Studios, Nightwork Records, Anchorage, Alaska. If you'd like to learn more about any of the stories or music you hear on our program, visit us on the web at wisdomoftheelders.org. Our theme this program of harvest and gatherings brings to mind our Diné holy person, the harvester, called Iniltani. We always call upon the harvester's spirit at the culmination of our ceremonial prayer songs. The harvester is a small insect that sits on the corn, and its song is eagerly anticipated. For in our gardens, when the corn comes ripe, Iniltani's voice can be heard, the sweet voice of completeness, that all that was meant to be is now ready, that what we have cultivated, fertilized, watched over, our prayers and dreams are now at hand. May Iniltani's sacred voice be heard in the gardens of your thoughts, plans, and doings. I'm Arlie Neskai. Hagona, till we meet again.
Wisdom of the Elders is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail, National Park Service. Learn more about the people and music you hear on Wisdom of the Elders. Purchase educational material or make a contribution to fund programming on our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. Discover the growing network of Indigenous oral historians, storytellers, and song carriers. Visit the Turtle Island Storytellers Network at turtleislandstorytellers.net. Executive producer of Wisdom of the Elders is Rose Hybear. Co-producers Clark Salisbury and William Ward. Script editor and director Larry Johnson. Writer Anne Morin. Our theme music is by music director Nico Wind. Website assistance from Clark Salisbury, Daniel Ciazon, Kara Briggs, and Rebecca Freeman. Educational materials by Larry McClure. Production assistance by Paul Woodsong, Jane Grover, Irene Foster, and Lionel Little Eagle Pin. Distribution manager Richard Fonseca. Legal advisor Judd Carasone. Special thanks to Surreal Studios and Nightwork Records, Native American Public Telecommunications, and American Indian Radio on Satellite.
We will walk.
We will.